Yes, 3 o'clock, and as we all know, it's time for Barbara Wells, who brings fun and information to our afternoon. Every weekday, Monday through Friday, she gives us complete coverage of the day's news for women, gives her views on what's going on, and interviews famous personalities. Happy Blue Monday, Barbara.
That's a funny way to say hello, George. You always are putting me off of my track. Hello, everybody. Happy Blue Monday, as George puts it. We certainly do have a wonderful guest here today, I think.
I do, too.
As I said on Friday, our guest today is Mr. James Stewart, a sort of up-and-coming motion picture actor who's trying very hard to get to be a star and at the moment is doing so in a play called Harvey that I think a great many people have heard of on Broadway and will be there for 7 more weeks.
I hear the crowds are gathering around to see his thespian endeavor, too.
They certainly are because, as I told you, I was there on the opening night and they were all around, not only to see the play, but to see Mr. Stewart doing the part. So a little bit later on, he will tell us the various things that he went through in getting prepared to open on Broadway after quite a few years.
Well, good, and we shall all listen.
Mm-hmm. You know, something was brought to my attention over the weekend, George, that I thought brought forth a very fine point. And though this is a Blue Monday, it's the beginning of the week, and I think that at the beginning of the week and the end of the week, but particularly the beginning, everyone should stop for a minute and take stock of themselves and perhaps try to improve various faults that they might find they have gathered up in the course of leading a very busy, hectic life.
You mean see what they had left over from last week and what they're going to begin the new week with, huh? Acquiring.
Yes, acquiring. Benjamin Disraeli, who was the Earl of Beaconsfield, said in a speech before the House of Commons once in 1865, Disraeli, who was very well known for the bright and brilliant things that he said, mentioned at the time, "There are rare instances when the sympathy of a nation approaches those tenderer feelings which are generally supposed to be peculiar to the individual and to be the happy privilege of private life. And this is one. In this case, I have learned when that did happen. There were two American war veterans who had saved their money and were going to build a gas station. And the UN came along. They were going to build the gas station in mid-Manhattan and try and start their own business. And as you know, the UN came along and took over certain sections of Manhattan in which they're going to build many buildings. And in taking over the land, they had to deprive these two war veterans of the property that they had gotten for their gas station. Now, you would think that they wouldn't worry very much about this and it wouldn't bother a big organization like the UN. But instead, they got together and signed an agreement whereby they lent to the two American war veterans $5,000, and they are going to find them a new gas station to replace the old one that they had. And I think it's pretty amazing when it's proven that not only one nation has a heart, but all of the nations put together have one. And I think it's a very good lesson for all individual people to learn that if you give individually, then you'll not only have a generous nation, but you will have a life that is better and more friends, and you'll feel a great deal prouder of yourself when you're through.
The goodwill toward men, which will give us peace on earth.
Yes, well, you know, George, in these times, which are very trying, and no one feels secure, and no one is sure of their next-door neighbor or their next-door country, of just what they want out of life, it's pretty easy to forget that the thing to do is to give. I saw a movie the other night called Miracle on 34th Street, and in it, Edmund Gwenn, who plays the part of the Macy Santa Claus, spoke a wonderful line. He said to a girl who was a non-believer and who didn't believe in being kind and in being good and in trusting other people, he said, "You must remember that Christmas is not a day, it's a state of mind." And I think that if we all try and remember that and put ourselves out a little bit more to extend ourselves to other people, even if it deprives us of something, that we will find ourselves a lot happier.
Mighty good words. There was a lot of good psychology in that picture.
Yes, it was. I walked over Friday night to see it a second time. I had seen it originally, and I just wanted to go and see it again. And it not only is so very funny, it kills you. The whole audience was roaring with laughter. But the psychology of it is the gentlest psychology in the world, and as a result, the best.
Mm-hmm.
But after Friday, I drove up to the country. I told you I was going on another bucolic junket, as I called it, and I went up to Purchase, New York. I'm always very delighted to find real country within driving distance of New York City and where the you were sort of away from the idea of soot and steel and all of those things. I went up to visit some friends of mine, and this is something that I know everyone would like to hear about because it's one of the most unusual summer places, country places, not only a summer place, that I have ever seen. Originally, it was a very large estate in purchase, and when the man who owned it died, he broke up the land and sold it in plots to different people. Now, they aren't little plots. Each person bought quite a bit of land. But these friends of mine bought the garage. It happened to be a 14-car garage. And you know what a garage looks like. It's just a big square building, and they made a house out of it. And this woman did it all herself, Mrs. Berlin, who has the most unique and best decorating taste that I have seen in a long time. She should really go in the business, except she is busy being the mother of two very attractive daughters. And she built a living room, covered the ceiling, left the brick walls standing and painted them dark brown, and then had big white doors and lots of windows, and has done it in mulberry, chartreuse, and gray chintzes, so it's very gay looking. But I couldn't get over the fact that out of a garage you could make a beautiful house. However, the garage is only big enough to hold Mr. and Mrs. Berlin and their daughter Richie and their daughter Bridget, which is spelled B-R-I-G-I-D, not E-T, the way most people do. And they had, on the property, they had a gardener's cottage and superintendent's cottage, and they turned these into guest houses for the people who spent the weekends with them. And in walking around the houses, I observed many good decorating hints. There are a lot of bedrooms that are small and have eaves and the ceiling sloped down, and you're very aware of the fact that it's a small room because the walls are so irregular and close. And I think the best way to handle a room like this is to do one wall in wallpaper and the other four, the other three. How many walls can you have in a room?
Well, you have a ceiling, we'll call that a wall.
You know, Monday, everybody's confused. You have the one wall in wallpaper, and then the other three are painted in the same color that predominates in the wallpaper. For instance, one of her bedrooms that is just big enough for a single bed, a dresser, a little dressing table, and a chair. It's a very little room. She has done it with lime green walls, and then the wall behind the bed is done with printed lime green and lavender wallpaper. And it certainly takes your eye off the fact that the rooms are very small. Another thing that Mrs. Berlin has done, that I think is particularly cute, everybody who has children likes to have their baby pictures around. Some people stick them in books and stick them in the attic, and then no one can ever see it. And she's taken the pictures of her two daughters, who are very grown up now and very attractive little girls. She took pictures of them when they were children and has had them framed in a group, a series of eight pictures, in little tiny old-fashioned frames, and has hung them on the wall as you would hang old English prints in a group of eight. And it's very attractive, and it keeps your children right around you. So all of those things, I think, are very helpful when you see someone who uses their own ingenuity to that degree.
You know, Florence, you completely amaze me.
I do.
You know more people than anyone I have ever known, and you have really fine weekends in little out-of-the-way places. Now, this town of Purchase, New York, isn't that what you said?
Yeah.
I'd like to know, did you inquire where that name came from? It always fascinated me.
No, George, I didn't inquire. I should have, but I didn't. You're always asking me these awkward questions. Why don't you ask me these questions before this broadcast? I didn't inquire where the name came from. I imagine it came when somebody purchased it and couldn't think of another name.
Well, you have such an eye for detail. You can go into a room and then come down here without notes or anything and describe exactly what the room was, what it consisted of.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that is the masculine attitude that would want to know where the name purchase came from, because after all, you all run the real estate business. I primarily was interested in the decorating end of it, so I'm sorry that I slipped up on being a thorough reporter, shall we put it?
You didn't slip up in the least.
I'll call up my friends, and before the broadcast is over, I'll have someone call up and find out where the name Purchase came from.
Well, I'll bet you someone writes in. That's the reason I brought it up, because who would think to ask such a thing but somebody like me who...
Well...
We'll let that go.
Yes, we'll let that go. However, to get on to another subject before George asks me any more embarrassing questions, speaking of household hints, here is one that I think is will save you a lot of pain, and that is if you're painting a ceiling, as lots of people do paint their own ceiling, it's from having to hold the brush upside down as you stand up. Of course, I'm describing this with my hands, which is going to help no one, but you're holding the brush upside down when you do paint a ceiling. You'll find out that great blobs of paint fall down the handle onto your hands and your nose and in your eyes and in your hair and get all over your clothes, and it's very awkward. Of course, if you're a painter in an old overalls, you don't care, but if you're doing your own work at home, it's difficult. Now, the way to prevent that is to cut a rubber ball in half. Push one of the halves up on the handle, and it will catch all the dripping. Don't you think that's cute?
That is. Good.
Well, it saves a lot of trouble. And here's another household hint.
You wouldn't have to wear goggles then, would you?
Mr. Stewart is looking at me like I'm crazy. I don't know whether he's ever painted his own ceiling. All he'd have to do is put the paint on top of his head. His head rubs the ceiling anyway and move across the room. But, however, Mrs. A. Kranz of Brooklyn, New York, wrote in to add to my hint that I gave last week about dipping a nail in paraffin so that you wouldn't, let the plaster drop as you tried to hammer it into the wall. And Mrs. Kranz says that if you're afraid you'll whack your finger when you're pounding your paraffin nails into the wall, just push the nail through a piece of stiff paper, which will hold the nail in place, and then you hold onto the paper and keep the nail in place. Then you can pound to your heart's content and your fingers are safe.
Really a little helpful hint.
It certainly is. I think it's wonderful. You know when nobody's going to be safe?
No, when's that?
Tuesday, July 29th.
Oh, that's the party date.
Yes, that will be our next audience show. We're having a repeat performance of our Charles of the Ritz Beauty Party, and for the purpose of bringing back our four contest winners, who will be there and will appear on the show, and they will tell the story of how they were done over, of just what the reaction was to it, and how they liked this new personality that Charles of the Ritz has given them. And other than that, of course, which every woman likes to know, that she's going to get something when she comes out and goes to a show, some very beautiful prizes will be given away to the studio audience by Charles of the Ritz.
And, of course, we're all looking forward to that. But another date I'm looking forward to is tomorrow, July 22nd.
Why?
When Look magazine comes out with a story disclosing the life from dawn till dusk of that leading female huckster, as they put it, Florence Pritchett.
Thank you, George. That's enough of a plug. However, if you want to come to our repeat performance of the Beauty Party, do write in for your tickets now so that you'll be sure to get them in time, because last time so many of you couldn't come and we were sorry to miss meeting you.
Address your cards or letters and be sure to state how many tickets you want to Barbara Wells, WOR, New York 18.
Mm-hmm. Did you know, George, that tonight, that wonderful show, Did Justice Triumph, moves from 8:30 to 9 p.m. following Scotland Yard?
I think that's one of the finest whodunits on the air lanes.
Well, I do, too, and I'm glad that it's moving up to a time when so many more people can listen to it. And I have gotten news from the programming department that tonight's script, which is called The Mimic Murders, is a really good script and one that nobody's going to be able to figure out who done it until the very end when they tell them. So I hope everybody will listen in tonight at 9 o'clock.
It's good, easy, and thrilling listening.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's something else that everybody should go see. We are slowly and surely getting around to 3:15 when I can stop doing all of this talking and Mr. James Stewart can do a little on his own. However, during July, and there is only 1 week left in July, at the Metropolitan Museum, there is a very good and interesting art display. They are paintings looted from the Netherlands, by Nazis during the war and returned to the owners by the United States Army. 46 paintings were sent here by owners for exhibit as their expression of gratitude. And there are 34 Dutch artists represented. Most of them are not well known to America. They're all by 17th century painters, but some are by Rembrandt, John Steen, and Jacob van Rijsdael. Of course, if any of my listeners are Dutch, that pronunciation might not have been perfect. However, the paintings are arranged with care to show the typical scenes, landscapes, city views, figures, still lives. And the patrons of this exhibit are people such as our president, Mr. Truman, General Eisenhower, Queen Wilhelmina, and many other people. So I think that if you stop by the Metropolitan Museum, you will be very interested in that art exhibit. And then, here's something else. To encourage artists who can't get showings in professional galleries, the Stanley Theater has placed its lounge at their disposal for exhibitions. So if any of you paint, you just get in touch with the Stanley Theater and you can have your things exhibited.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I said earlier, our guest today, I'm not going to waste 1 minute of any more time. It is exactly 3:15. And our guest today is a fairly well-known actor who's trying very hard, as I said earlier, to get to be a great big movie star, Mr. James Stewart, who we have all seen on the screen. And who is now currently starring as Elwood P. Dowd, and who at the moment is gargling and doing all kinds of things. St- starring as Elwood P. Dowd in that fantastic play produced by Brock Pemberton, Harvey. Now, I think that that is about as much as I should say, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Miss Wells.
You're welcome. Any time at all.
I want to take this opportunity to tell you that I think it's just wonderful the way that you just keep talking on and on there.
Well, I'm
glad. And she doesn't have any script. How do you remember all that stuff?
I don't know. I've talked most of my life, and I find that I just save it all up for this half hour.
Well, I thought all you girls in the radio here had it all typed out and everything. You just talk, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very good. It's amazing the way you can remember. I don't know whether it's amazing or not, but I'm very impressed.
Well, I'm glad you're impressed, Mr. Stewart.
Maybe everybody can remember stuff like that.
Can't you remember?
No, for a long time, I couldn't remember my hat size.
You couldn't?
No.
What size is it?
Oh, you want to bring the thing right to a head right now?
No, right now, before the show's over. I can't remember where Purchase got its name, so it's all right for you to remember, not remember your hat size, but tell me.
You didn't even ask anybody about Purchase. Somebody certainly told. Oh, go ahead.
Well, Jimmy, tell me. You came to New York to do a play, Harvey, and in movies you have scripts and you do them a scene at a time. Did you have any trouble in coming back to do a whole play and memorizing the part?
Oh, yes, yes. I hadn't done it for 13 or 14 years, and it's a very difficult thing. It's very hard, especially in a play that has been going a long time, so you want to get every and, if, and but, and that's very hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very difficult. And, of course, you have... You always have that fear of opening night of something happening to the line. Of course, there are so many things that can happen.
Well, like what, for
opening
example?
Opening night. Well, I was thinking about those sleepless nights I had there, before the opening, I was thinking about all the things that could happen on an opening night. And some that I just remembered when you was on the stage years ago, things that really happened. But there, and I sort of put them in categories. I put them. I didn't really put them in categories, but I suppose you could, if you wanted to put them in categories, you could. You could say when you used to make an outline of something in school, you'd say Roman numeral one.
Yeah.
Let's call it unfortunate things that can happen.
By James
opening,
Stewart.
Opening night by James Stewart.
All right, well,
Roman numeral one.
All right, go on. I'm fascinated.
Now, this would be, would just say Roman numeral one, all of the unfortunate things that could happen. Hello. Roman numeral one.
I think we should. Jimmy is now saying hello to some people who are peeking through doors. And
all the girls in the organization.
Roman numeral one.
Yes, go on.
Is non-fatal. Non-fatal happening.
Non-fatal.
Yes. Now, non-fatal. Then a small one under Roman numeral
one. 1A.
No, we'll get to A later. Small one. Small one would be, I would say, voice flub-dubs.
What? What in the world are voice flub-dubs?
Well, a voice flub-dub is just, you have a line to say, and you say, some people think I'm going to be on time for the appointment, but I'm going to be later than most people think. Well, instead of saying most people think, you say, and most people pink.
Oh, yeah.
You don't notice it, you see. But the person that you're saying it to either faints or laughs or drops the teacup or something, and it's confusing to the office, but they forget about it pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? That was one under...
Roman numeral one. Well, non-fatal happenings on opening night.
Well, then I'd say... Small number two under that would be mechanical things. or physical. Let's go to the physical things first, and that is just coming on the stage and tripping and falling down.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very good.
I've done that, and that again, especially in a serious play, which is the one I did it in. It couldn't be a comedy, but I forget coming in to tell my wife that I'm going to leave her or something, and I fell down.
Well,
I just
sure
tripped on the
do.
Place. Well, there again, the audience sort of forgets about it, and it isn't too serious, and you can overcome that. Then I'd say where are we now?
We're through one and two in non-fatal.
Two, three, I would say, would be prop misfortunes. Well, the prop is anything where you go to a door and open the door and the doorknob comes off. Or you back into a potted plant and it falls over and all the plant comes out and you have to... Or you want to light a cigarette and the match keeps going out because you're nervous and you're blowing out instead of in. And now the cigarette, you can't light the cigarette. I've had that happen. Or with teacups. When the teacup, you have the teacup before they pour the tea in the teacup, the shaking makes the teacup rattle. And the teacup usually falls off the cup, off the saucer, and breaks. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there aren't any more cups, so you can't have any tea, and that's probably the cup that the poison's in,
you know.
So it spoils the story. But even then, you can get over that. Well, that's about it. Those are the things that could happen. And, of course, you have the stage manager who can, if you just forget a line, of course, that's another classification. But if you just forget a line, well, the stage manager can tell you, or somebody else can tell you, and lots of times the audience can tell you what it is.
Yes.
So that isn't so hard. But now that, I think, that would take care of that category. Then the other category, Roman numeral two, is the fatal type of the fatal type, and under that, I would say, I want to make it quite clear to you, Miss Wells, that these are certainly not all the things that can happen to you, but they're just the things that kind of come to my mind at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
The under Roman numeral two of the fatal type happenings on the stage. Is a thing that is known as the dry-up.
What's that?
Well, the dry-up...
How can you dry up if you're playing the part of an inebriate like Elwood P. Dowd?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question.
You are?
Yeah.
You are?
It's a very good question.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
Well, that's all right, Barbara. I'm willing to like a question if it comes to me all in good faith.
Well, go on.
Where were we? We were under... Roman numeral two.
I'm broken
two.
Up and you're drying up.
Roman numeral two.
Yes,
the dry up. No, Roman numeral two is the classification, which is
fatal
happening.
Yes. So now you're drying up.
Well, you want me to
no.
get worried about that?
No.
You keep looking at the clock all the
no.
time.
I'm sorry. I can't say very much. You've got me laughing so hard.
The dry-up is a thing that is known. It's a sort of a paralysis that comes over you. And you come to a line, and suddenly everything stops. And you can't move. And the stage manager throws the line.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose, just to illustrate my point, which is Roman numeral two of the right.
Yes.
Suppose the line is, Geraldine, I'm going to leave through that door.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say door, you point to the door. Well. You point, but you dry up on door.
Yeah.
Everything stops. and the stage manager calls to you and says the line, but nothing happens.
Uh-huh.
And all the people on the stage tell you the line, and then they open the door and suggest it to you. And then somebody writes it on a piece of paper and says door and holds it in front of you. And then somebody goes down on the audience and tells the audience, and they get the whole audience to say door, and the audience sort of chants door. But you can't, you just stand there, and the perspiration starts, and you start to shake. And finally, they have to lower the curtain, and you can do one of two things. You can either go home, or you can start the act over again, which I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen, and that's it's really a very terrifying thing. But the other night, the dry up is the terrible thing. But I finally got through it all right. But
you got through it beautifully.
It's a terrifying. It's a terrifying thing to think that that's possible, and it is, because I've seen it happen.
Well, now you know you didn't do anything the other night that was wrong. You were wonderful. So opening, you may know of all of these non-fatal Roman numeral number 1 and 2 things, but you didn't do any of them.
Oh well, yes. You don't. You do them. Sometimes they are noticeable, but there were plenty of them.
Well,
especially in the first act.
If you were so nervous then in the first few days of
the
play,
getting better now.
Is it?
Yeah, it's getting better now because it's a pretty tricky part, and I'm getting a little easier on. And another thing, I'm beginning to eat again.
Didn't you eat?
No. It's when you get nervous. I didn't eat. It's a very good habit.
Yes, it is.
Eating.
You're very thin. You don't look like you eat very much anyway.
Yeah, I don't. I don't. It is a very good habit, and I'm glad to be back eating.
You are. I'm glad you're glad. How do you like Josephine Hull?
Oh well, that's been one of the wonderful things about the play. She's really an inspiration. I watch everything she does, every performance, and you can't, as many times as you see it, you can't help it laugh and go right along with her. She's an amazing actress and one of the finest in the country, I think, and in the world. She, hers is a very, very difficult part. I mean, she's done several a little like this. You remember Mrs. Sycamore and You Can't Take It With You and Arsenic and Old Lace. But I think this is probably the best one she's had for a long time. She does a wonderful thing with the audience.
She's wonderful with her face.
Yeah, wonderful thing she does with the audience. She can just take them right with it.
Uh-huh. Jimmy, tell me, I have always heard that everybody sat up all night long to read the reviews. They would wait to do that. Did you do that?
Well, I wanted to. I guess that's a sign of age or something. I got tired. I went to bed.
Well, of course, if you'd been eating, it would have helped.
I
Maybe
think it would.
You didn't eat.
Yeah.
What do you eat?
What do I eat?
Yeah.
All various types of things.
You know, have your mother and father come down from Indiana to see
the
play?
They were down short Saturday night.
How'd they like it?
Well, they liked it pretty well. They thought it was fine. They're coming back. They're coming back tonight. They said they missed several things, so they're coming back.
Well, there is.
A lot of people laughed at things, and they didn't see it was funny, so we're coming back
to see whether it is funny or not. Well, it was awful funny. I've seen it 5 times, and each time I thought it was funny.
It's a funny play. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful play.
Well, we think you're wonderful for coming down today and being our guest. Our guest was James Stewart, as you no doubt could tell, who is in Harvey, so everybody rushed to see it.
Barbara Wells will be back tomorrow at 3.
Goodbye, everybody.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.